Hi. Some books we talk about in this episode address sex and violence, and we just wanted to give you a heads up before you start listening. Thanks.
Hi, everybody.
Ow.
You okay?
No, it's scared. I got scared.
The cord attacked you.
I feel fragile.
Aw.
It's a gray day, and we're all sort of
it
tired.
Is. Yeah. We haven't had enough coffee. Yeah. Okay. Welcome to The Librarian is in the New York Public Library's podcast about books, culture, and what to read next. I'm Gwen.
And I'm Rita Hayworth.
And today, Rita and I will be talking about books, and next week we will have, wait for it.
Yeah.
This is one of our most exciting guests ever. We are going to have Nancy Pearl on the podcast talking, and for those of you who may not know her name, she is a very awesome, very famous librarian. I was looking on her website and they call her America's librarian. But
is
she
it
kind
trademarked?
Of, it is not trademarked. But she kind of invented the concept of reader's advisory, which is what my job is based on. And we use principles that she came up with every single day. And I'm super excited to
talk
to her.
Do you have the doll?
I do have the doll.
The
I have
action
two
figure.
Of the action figures.
I think that Nancy Pearl has an action figure, a shushing librarian, you know, the stereotypical librarian, put like with a movable arm that shushes a little stack of books as a set dressing. And every librarian either gets it or gets it for themselves or gets it for Christmas or holiday or Hanukkah or whatever holiday or birthday from someone in your family because it's sort of the go-to librarian. Mm-hmm. I have one.
Yes, you do.
Of course.
Is it in a funny setup?
Oh, you do set yours up. Is yours in your office?
Yes. Ours, we have a little diorama. So for some reason, my colleague Lynn has these three G.I. Joe dolls that are all dressed in like various kinds of like combat outfits. And they're all much smaller than the Nancy Pearl doll. And they're all sitting around her as she stands up as though she's like giving them a story time. Like she's like reading to
we'll
these like
to
very
ask
butch
her
looking guys.
Next week, if that's a fantasy of Nancy Pearl's, she's like three GIs are sitting in a circle. I'm standing there telling them a story, fade to dark, and then Nancy can finish the rest for us.
Oh,
you know what they say,
fun.
Librarians after dark, the glasses come off.
Yeah. Everybody whips off their cardigans.
I think Nancy would actually probably be very interesting on that subject of fantasy.
Interestingly, her book, which she's just written her first work of fiction, which we're going to talk to her a little bit about too. And it is very much about sex and about sort of the way that a sex scandal kind of, I don't know if you would call it a scandal, impacts the rest of someone's life.
Ooh.
It's a very interesting.
Actually,
should we just
Nancy
talk about
Pearl
it?
Is next week, but you read her book,
I
which
did.
Has not come out yet, correct?
Correct. Oh,
so
that's
you're
true.
Breaking your rule.
I am breaking my rule.
You're in NY Pill Recommends. You get these copies. I don't.
I know.
Anyway, that's
fair.
And
I didn't share with you. It wasn't nice of me. It comes out on Monday, September 5th, which I believe is Labor Day, right?
Yeah.
And also my wedding anniversary.
Really?
Yes.
So
we'll talk about the plot of this really briefly.
Why?
You can also, I'm pretty sure it's already in our catalog, so you can put a hold on it if you want to.
I'm just poking at you.
So Lizzie, thanks. Lizzie is the main character, and we're very much inside her head, although it is written in third person, but it's very much about kind of Lizzie, and she, I don't think this is, I'm trying to decide if this is ruining anything. Oh, it does say, so okay, the back blurb just says a shameful secret from her past, haunting a decision. So I won't say
sometimes
say what
we
the
can
secret
do spoileries,
yeah,
but
this is a spoiler.
This is Nancy Pearl's George and Lizzie?
Yes.
Her first
and also,
fiction
it,
book.
It, you You know exactly what it's going to be.
I want to know.
The first, okay, so spoiler, if you're planning to read this book and you don't want to know, skip ahead a little bit right now. But so Lizzie, in her senior year of high school, decides to sleep with the entire football team.
All right, well, I should say, I'm sorry. I've always been accused of interrupting you, and here I go. But the cover of the book is a bunch of names. A lot of male names with and Lizzie. So it's like Lauren and Lizzie, Ranger and Lizzie, Jack and Lizzie, Rafe and Lizzie. And they're all crossed out. So you sort of get an idea there's something going
on
there.
There's something going on.
She wants to sleep with the whole football
she
team?
She does sleep with the whole football
team.
Whoa. It starts
Even
out as like
ones?
A dare. They must be super closeted.
Okay.
It starts out as kind of a dare with her best friend, and then her best friend decides she doesn't want to do it, and then Lizzie goes ahead and does it.
Wow.
And so it's sort of about how that decision reverberates in her future relationships, including the one with George, the title of the book, who she may or may not eventually marry.
You're looking at the blurb to make sure you're not giving anything away.
Yeah.
So is the...
No, okay. No spoilers, because it says it on the back. George and Lizzie get married. And so that event, as well as another affair that... Well, not affair. Another relationship that she has in college with this guy named Jack, kind of play out throughout the course of the book. And you see the way that that initial act kind of looms large in her consciousness.
Can I ask, like, why... She's what, 16 when she decides to
Lizzie,
do this?
Yeah, or 17, 18.
Why is she just, what is the motivation for this?
That would be a really interesting question to ask Nancy Pearl, actually. Mm. I think very deliberately, Lizzie is not maybe the most self-aware narrator that we've ever had. She's not an unreliable narrator exactly, but she's not like, we don't have a lot of distance from her. We're very close to her. And so there is not a clear reason for why she does it. She's kind of bored. She wants a fun project. They call it the great game. And you get the sense that she didn't think it through very well when she made the decision to do it. It becomes this sort of issue with her and her friend where she's angry that the friend backed out. So then that makes her more determined to do it. And I think it's probably safe to say she doesn't realize how long the repercussions of that decision are going to hang around in her life.
I mean, it's very interesting. I think sexual, we've talked about this before in many different ways, like sexuality is a fascinating subject. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really just, mm-hmm. it's a component of us as human beings, as mammals, as animals. And we're not tired of ever talking about it. That's why I was asking, like, the motivation. But it's like, you know, I sort of find it interesting because she could have chosen a lot of other projects
mm-hmm.
she to could take
have.
On.
Right. I really want to know why this story was the one she wanted to tell. It definitely is about a very long-term marriage mm-hmm. and sort of the things that you give up or keep secret or whatever over the course of a very long relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting, too.
I think it's a great premise.
Yeah.
Are we going to talk to Nancy about it? I guess we will.
Yeah,
she'll reveal as much as she wants
to. Right, right.
Can you say anything more? No, that's you've said.
No,
what we can.
But it leads me really nicely into a segue into my next book. Which is also just to warn people who are listening right now, this book is about sexual assault and there's a lot of violence in the book. And so just a heads up that is coming. So this is called The Nowhere Girls by Amy Reed, and it's a YA book. And I'm breaking my rule with this one again because it doesn't come out until October. But I loved it so much that I can't not talk about it. And it feels so pressing and immediate to me. I know, I'm breaking my rule twice.
No, I just realized
so
I have a counterpoint
bad.
To you about the books I've read
about
are written so long ago.
Oh, really?
In a weird way.
Well, that's funny.
So we're going to have back
like
TBT
past and
TBF.
Right. Huh? So this is a young adult novel. It is about, there's sort of three girls at the core who are called the Nowhere Girls. And it is about rape culture in their high school and this very powerful football team kind of bro-y.
Another football team,
right. They were kind of weird. It's not only the football team, but like it, and I don't mean to target football players or anything, but it's more about the like sort of bro-y masculine mm-hmm. culture that leads to rape culture. And there is, so the very basic beginning of this is that there's a new girl. Well, so there's three girls who are at the center, teens who are at the center of the story. There's Grace, Rosina, and Erin. And so Grace, who's the one that you see a lot of things through her lens, I think. Her family had to leave this like southern town where she grew up because her mom is a preacher and she falls off a horse and has it doesn't say if she has a concussion, but she kind of has like a revelation.
The mother.
Right. And she becomes really liberal and starts preaching this version of Christianity about love and acceptance and like, you know, encompassing all of humanity. And this like little super conservative town can't take it and essentially throws her out. She gets fired and they have to move. And so they move to this town, which is called, what is it? It's in Oregon. Prescott High. Yeah, I can't remember. I think they sort of intentionally make the town very like... Oh, I should also say it's by Amy Reed, who is an author who has written a ton of books and I had not known about them. And this is like... This brings my imposter syndrome like fully to the surface because I'm like, how could she have written all these amazing books that were nominated for all these awards? Don't know her. Yes, all young adult. So, yeah, sorry, everyone. I've been missing Amy Reed for a really long time.
Everyone feels like they have imposter syndrome.
I think they do.
To some degree.
I was just reading something that said, wouldn't it be great if we could distribute all of our imposter syndrome to the people who actually should have it, who are imposters? That would be really great. However, Grace moves into this house where this girl named Lucy Moynihan used to live. And she was at the center of this scandal, I guess you could say scandal, in this small town where she accused several boys of gang raping her. And no one believed her. And she was basically run out of town. And the school and the community are all really tight with each other and didn't listen to her and didn't believe her. And it kind of ruined her life, it sounds like. And she left these scratchings in the room that said things, you know, sort of like messages to the next person in the room. And so Grace is seeing these messages and really wants to know who Lucy Moynihan is. And then she makes these two other friends named Rosina and Aaron. And Rosina is from an immigrant family. They emigrated from Mexico, and she has to work a million jobs, and she works in their Mexican restaurant, and people treat her horribly in the Mexican restaurant. And she's like this total, like, badass, punky. Oh, can I say badass?
Yeah.
Can I? The producer shrugs. She's just this awesome lesbian, super cool girl who doesn't fit in anywhere in this little conservative town. And then there's Aaron, who also doesn't fit in anywhere in this town, and she has Asperger's. And you really, and actually the first thing that really captivated me about this book is that you see inside her head so convincingly, and it really made me think about what it would be like to have Asperger's and what she and how her parents respond to it also, which is like, I won't go down the whole crazy road of how I feel like this book changed my parenting, but I actually think that it did. And so it's sort of what the three of them do to try to rise up and end this horrendous culture at their school. I remembered something else that I love about the format of this book, which is that there are excerpts from this blog called The Real Men of Prescott, which is written by someone, we don't have to talk about who it is, who signs his name Alpha Guy for 541. And they are these excerpts from an imaginary blog that are like male supremacy. It reminds me of that, like, not all men stuff where men are trying to justify why they're oppressing women. I don't even know how to describe it really, but they are so realistic that it is creepy. Like, it sounds like every single time you've ever ill-advisedly clicked through some Twitter link to see, like, what, you know, these people are saying. And, like, it's really awful. Here, I'll read you a tiny section of one of
those. From the Alpha Guy's blog?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, you know what? No, I won't. It's too horrible. They're realistic and really awful.
What do you mean realistic?
It just sounds like the kind of hateful nonsense that you would hear from people who write anonymously online treating women horribly. So let's not read that. Let's read this part. Okay. So this is from right in the middle of the book, and it's about Grace. And she's... And another thing I love about the structure of this book is that the chapters alternate. They don't alternate perspectives. It's from a very... It's all third person, and it's a very omniscient narrator, which is really appropriate and good for this because you're seeing these very intimate slices of each of their lives, and then it's interspersed with chapters called Us that gives you perspectives of all of these different teens in the high school and all of these different people, as well as sometimes the main characters. And it feels almost like that sort of Greek chorus feeling that you get when you're hearing a lot of different voices, and it's so good, but it's all in the same voice. So you're getting a lot of different perspectives from this single omniscient narrator. Right. And it's like characters that you don't know and never see again. There's some, you know, it's really, really creative.
Do you ever get
written.
A perspective from that beyond the Alpha Guy's post, like the Alpha site? What is it called? Not Alpha, but
yeah, Alpha Guy 541. Oh, the Real Men of Prescott blog. Is that
The Real Men of Prescott.
Yeah.
Do you just get their... No. Do you get any other point?
It's the girls only. Yeah. And the Nowhere Girl... Well, you know what? I won't tell you what the Nowhere Girls means, but it's relevant. Okay.
Wow, what a tease you are.
I know. Okay.
Book tease.
Grace yearned, always yearned to feel a part of something, and for a long time she felt secure with her place in youth group, in her church, in her tiny clique of friends. It was a small, sturdy box she shoved herself inside because there didn't seem to be any other reasonable choices. But this, now, whatever this is, feels different. It's not even a box. It's something she's building to fit her, a place in the world that is adapting and growing and changing as she changes. She's a part of something she's helped to create, not something pre-made that someone else decided was good for her. It was Grace who decided this was good for her. Grace decided. It's so powerful. The writing is so good. The Nowhere Girls by Amy Reed. Yeah. It's amazing.
There's so much in there, like with the two books you talked about. It is coincidental and interesting that they both have football teams. I mean, I'm assuming in Nancy Pearl's book, George and Lizzie, like it, the sexuality of her sleeping with the whole football team was not ultimately abusive to her. I mean, it was her choice, her success, so-called, to go through that. The issue is not that there was abuse.
Right. It came from her.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, you could probably argue
that society, you know, planted some kind of seed in that way. But no, it's coming from her. It wasn't like the football team assaulted her.
Right.
And no. Right.
What do you mean planted a seed?
Yeah, I don't know. You could probably argue that like rape culture and, you know, the domineeringness of masculinity changed the way that she thought about sex and made her feel as though, you know, this was a way to have some sort of power or something. But that's not really the answer to your question is no. It was the idea was coming from her.
I mean, considering all that culture has gone through in the last 30 years, it is interesting. It does seem I have no data on this. It's just anecdotal observation, but especially the political climate and this, what you just talked about, there does seem to be this rise of like assertion of traditional masculinity you haven't really heard about. Like, you know, unfortunately, part of the analysis is like after years of feminism and, you know, there's this reaction. I'm just like, it shouldn't be the other way around. Like after years of feminism, it should be like, chill out. Mm-hmm. When you were talking about these two books, you reminded me of a book I'd read well over 20 years ago. So it may not be available in the library, but it was one of the books to remember that fabled best books list when I was on the committee in the 90s, a nonfiction book called Our Guys by Bernard Lefkowitz. And it made a really big impression on me because it was about a real life incident, a rape by a football team or members of a football team of a girl who was mentally disabled. Mm. And it went to trial and all that. But what it makes the big point of is this football culture, really sports culture, and the protection and reverence by the sit town and school culture to protect that culture, which boggled my mind. Like, who cares about football? I mean, I guess we could say that. I know. I mean, to that extent, where it's like you have to protect these guys. Right. Because they're heroes in the town, because they throw a ball around. Oh, this is terrible. Football lovers are going to be like outraged, which they should be, because I don't really get it. I mean, I get it to a degree, like playing games, but not to the mammoth degree where it's an obsession or like the sports culture needs to be protected, because I guess it's also revenue. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. But like,
I think it starts really early, right? Because then once the kids are really talented at football, when they grow up, then they enter into like college ball and professional sports, and that's a whole other sort of like lifestyle. I don't even know what word to use, but like that's a whole other way of living where your actions and behaviors are privileged over other people's. And like, I do think I totally hear what you're saying. I think it does start a lot in high school.
Well, I mean, everyone should go watch Friday Night Lights too. Like, I always want to know where it comes from, why it persists. Like, you know, you could say like the sort of superficial twin designations for gender is like, and the ultimate stereotypical designation for gender is like football player for guys, beauty pageant contestant for women, or something like that. Like one that for men idealizes strength and agility and conquering and winning, and for women is a passive, pretty thing to look at. It's like that hasn't gone away, and it's, I mean, I don't get it on either extreme. Yeah. I mean, I get elements of it for sure, but like it's the extremity of it still amazes me. Like it always made me amazed that the Super Bowl was like the most watched TV show ever for all year. I'm like, really? It's not the Oscars? It's not the Golden Globes? I'm confused.
The VMAs.
I'm confused. Ay, ay, ay.
Well, yeah. We could talk about this for a lot longer, because what I really want to do now is ask what it feels like to be a boy growing up who doesn't fit in. I shouldn't make that assumption. Were you a football player?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was a football player. Yeah.
You're really tall. You could have been a basketball player.
Yeah. I mean, no, I
mean,
was not.
Were you a sports person? You don't strike
not,
me
you know,
as one.
That's a long story.
Yeah,
but
right.
Like, what was interesting about that is that, oh my, there's so much there. Because my short story is that I remember once in early high school, before, you know, I just wanted to crawl under a rock, basically. Mm-hmm. I did try, like, I thought I could, I'm not coordinated really, but I have good legs. So I thought maybe soccer. And But then it's soccer, like, I thought about this, like, to be a part of, to do it. And I also felt somewhere in me, like, an interest in sort of just physically expressing myself. Mm-hmm. Soccer scared me because it was too many boys and it was too teamish. So I actually went to, which was, I can't believe I got it together, went to the orientation for track and field. And I remember when I walked into the classroom where the first day of, like, being interested in track and field, and I remember feeling like this frisson of, like, what is he doing here about me? I don't remember. It's so long ago, I hardly remember, but I remember that sort of, but you know what? I never went back. And in partly my feeling was that I just wanted to see if I could even walk in the room, but I couldn't possibly pursue it. And the reason why I counterpointed soccer with track and field is because track and field was solitary.
Yeah.
I could do it alone.
Other people didn't rely on you.
You know, knock into other boys and, like, who scared me. So, no, I was not a football player.
Yeah.
And you asked that because I was part of that culture, or I understood that culture?
Yeah, or sort of what the flip side of that culture looks like. But, I mean, I guess I could ask myself the same question. Like, God knows I was not a cheerleader or a beauty pageant queen or whatever. Like, no, I was definitely not on that track either.
I mean, I could certainly see, I mean, I already described the impulse of wanting to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And at that age, like, part of other boys, like, world life. I wanted to be a part of, but he ultimately rejected it because I actually, possibly, even though it's so long I hardly remember, rejected it for just the reasons you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't want to, something about boy culture, so to speak, I just didn't like.
Oh, and that's so much what this book is about, actually.
That really
ties into what these teens sort of wind up gathering together to do. I know I'm being really vague. This book made me think about myself in high school a lot. It made me think about, like, the educational situation I hope for my son. Like, it really, this is a book that has, like, ripples that go very far beyond a story. Because I think some books are just a really great story and you read it and you're like, that was great. This book made me feel very present and important right now, even though it's totally fiction. In some ways, it felt like nonfiction to me.
I wish we could fast forward 20 years and see what your son's like.
I know.
Because it's true. I mean, not having kids, I feel like you could work, and you have to work for them, for the kids. But there is that element of, like, you know, there's some of you, elements of them you cannot control. Mm-hmm.
And I get really scared.
It
scares me to think about, what if he's not sporty? And what if, I mean, he has two parents who are not very sporty, and I think the odds of him being a book lover are a lot higher than the odds of him being, like, a sports star.
I don't know. Does it really work that way?
I don't know. And I hope to, like, expose him to lots of different things and let him choose what he wants to do and all that kind of stuff.
Be you and authentically Gwen and your husband, same. And
I mean, ultimately, you don't really have a choice, right? But anyway, but I do, you know, you get scared about what your kid's high school experience is going to be like. It's really, I was really lucky. Mine was really positive for the most part, and not everyone's is like that. And I just hope that it does turn out. Can I do I was going to say a humble brag, but it's actually just a straight up brag. I'm so proud of him. And then we'll move on to your books, because are we even talking about books anymore? But
I don't even want to talk about my books because they seem secondary to what you just talked about.
So the other day, we've talked a lot about teaching kids consent and things on our podcast before.
Yes.
And so the other day, I got to his preschool. He's playing outside. I'm, like, waiting to pick him up, but I'm letting him finish playing with his friends. And two of them are they're playing, and anyone who spent a lot of time around small children knows this state of affairs where, like, they're having fun and they're tickling each other and they're running around and whatever, but, like, you can tell that somebody's going to get hurt soon. Like, that peak of energy is sort of, like, right there hovering under the surface. And he is, they're running around, and there's three of them, like, his two sort of best friends there. And one of them kind of knocks into the other one and starts to sort of tickle him, and the kid on the ground says, "No, stop." And she doesn't stop. I mean, they're three. Like, she doesn't stop. And my son says, wait for it.
Oh, wow.
She said stop. Or, I'm sorry. The kid on the ground said stop. That means you have to stop. When someone says no, you have to listen.
Your son said that?
My son said that. I was like, oh,
the apple my God.
I was like, this is the biggest parenting win I have ever achieved in my entire life. I was really, really proud of him.
No one out there knows, because when we played the audio of him, it's a video, and he's just got this fabulous face.
Oh, thank you.
I want to see him grow up.
I know. I'm excited for him to grow up.
He really does. Yeah. So anyway, I don't want. We're done.
It's 11:45.
Are we really not going to talk about your books?
I guess. Well, you know what? This was the Gwen show. And
this
was
the Gwen show.
There's no Ank and Gwank anymore. It's fine. I don't care. Everyone likes you better anyway.
well, that is true.
We have a couple. I'll just basically. Well, it's fine. I actually felt like listening today. It's that kind of day. But I did read a book that I loved, and I'll just mention the one, and maybe save the other one for another time, or others for another time. I actually came armed with lots of stuff, but the book I read is by Patrick Modiano, who won a Nobel Prize in 2015. He's a French writer. And before 2015, his books had hardly been translated into English. Hmm. And since he won the Nobel in 2015, a lot of his books have been translated, and they're huge in the library. You must have heard of him, Patrick Modiano.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I read, not knowing, I read one of his most famous books that he wrote in the 70s. This is why I said I read books written a while ago, but has just been translated a couple of years ago in English for American and English speaking audiences, called Missing Person. And it's really, it's cataloged under mystery, even though you're not, if you're a certain kind of mystery fan, it's not a straight up, like, someone, a crime's committed, someone investigates it, we figure out who did it.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting in that it's called Missing Person by Patrick Modiano. It's about a guy who has amnesia, who works, it's like set in the mid-60s, who has been working for about 10 years for a detective, assisting a detective, and then that detective decides to retire and close the agency. So our lead hero, loses that job, but he then decides to investigate his own past because he has amnesia. He doesn't remember his whole entire life beyond the 10 years he worked in that agency. So the guy who's retiring, the head of that agency, says, "Oh, yeah, I'll leave you the keys to the office. I'm going to keep it on all my research materials, because it takes place in the mid-60s. You can use it and start investigating your life." So what's interesting is you realize is that you have a detective who's on the trail of a mysterious man himself. I mean, the detective is also the pursued. So the detective is looking for his own life. So
wow.
Patrick Modiano clearly has a librarian-esque love of directories and looking up names and addresses. Like, there's sometimes a page that just lists names and addresses that are possible clues to this guy. I should mention that the head of the detective agency, when he met our hero, I will call for lack of a better word, gave him an identity, like fake papers and stuff, just to give him something, even though our guy doesn't know who he is and where he's from and what his story is.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole story is going through all these directories and following leads and meeting people who give him pictures or clues and as he moves on. And it was one of those books that brings up the questions of, and as our hero brings up the question of, like, oh, yes, I do remember that. And then a page or two later, he'll be like, I think I remember that, or am I just wanting to believe? Like, in other words, who am I? What's my identity? And when you think you know something, especially in terms of memory, is it really real? Because the nature of memory changes and all that. So it's a very sort of exciting. It put me into sort of a trance. I had one of those reading moments that I cherish that I haven't felt in a while, where I was lying on my bed reading this book in the afternoon, and I was reading it and under its spell, and then before I knew it, I realized, it got dark.
Oh, it got dark.
And I didn't put a light on. Like, I was so reading it that it suddenly was hard to read. I kept trying to, without thinking about it, adjust to find the light in the room. And then I realized, oh, it's twilight and the sun's going down and I've been reading this book and I forgot to turn a light on because I was so mesmerized by it and its journey. It's quite beautiful quite interesting. And I definitely want to read more of his, even though it's, and I definitely want to read more because I sort of like this concept that Patrick Modiano has said about himself. He's written over 20 books. He says, I've written the same book over and over and over. Like, he deals with the same themes constantly. And I could see why he would win a Nobel.
That's like an echo of the story, too. What story? That's an echo of the plot of the detective trying to find himself.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And it's not like, it's not, you know, full of suffering and like, who am I kind of thing. It has its roots in noir and hard-boiled detective guys like Raymond Chandler.
So kind of plot driven, like, do you, you're sort of, are you reading to find out what happens or
you read to find out what happens because you sort of are thinking like a mystery, like okay, clues, let me pay attention, like that address, that person's name. I mean, the book is like 150 pages, but there's like over 20 characters introduced. Like, you're introduced to all these people that you're like, all right, like, maybe that person's gonna be the key to unlock his identity for him. And so it's a really, really nice, it's a really nice journey. It's a really amazing journey to read.
That sounds great.
To read. So I would like to read more. That's cool. Patrick Modiano, missing person.
All right, great. Maybe we'll leave it there.
Yeah.
And we'll do non-book recommendations next time, maybe.
Yeah, today was a rainy day of discussion.
I've had a lot of coffee, though.
Well, see, that's why I can't have enough, apparently. So that's why you
talk the whole time. Okay.
You should just cut me out.
Basically. I'll just talk to myself. Yeah, that would be fascinating.
Frank's not here, much to everyone's delight.
Frank, I couldn't do it without you.
Oh.
All right.
It was nice listening to you.
Thank you. This was really great. Okay. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you think of it, please go and review us in iTunes. You can check out our blog posts and go to nypl.org/podcast to see a full rundown of all of our episodes, complete with links. You can find us on Twitter at @NYPLRecommends and at @Jefferson_Market_Library. And we
love jabbing you.
No,
with that.
I wasn't jabbing you. I was saying it totally
you
normally.
You are always
that time.
Making fun
I was,
of me.
I did it with
you
a completely straight face.
You think underscores are old school or something? All right.
I just wonder why you're not just Jefferson Market Library. Does somebody have that already? Okay, we'll talk about that later. Thanks for listening, everybody. And next week, don't forget
the hard questions.
I used to be a journalist. Okay, next week we'll be back with Nancy Pearl. Thanks, everyone.